The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hope you're doing well. The end of another week, and summertime is here. Obviously, this weather this week was a good reminder of that. It was like, what, in the mid-90s for a couple of days. Cooled off today, so that's nice. But summertime is here. In a couple of weeks, I'll actually be broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, right by the Grand Ole Opry. At the Gaylord, huge facility there, their big conference center hotel thing. Faith and Freedom, which is started by Ralph Reed. We've done some things with them in the past, and they just work on the grassroots level and across the country. They have their annual convention there. A lot of great speakers, but they invited me to come be a part of Radio Row, so I'm going to do the show that Friday, which will be June 17th. Live from Nashville, and hopefully we'll be able to grab some great interviews, got some big speakers while I'm there. So we're going to work on that and be a part of that and just try to gather more information and education, inspiration. Yes, I don't need a whole lot of that at this point in my career. I'm inspired and engaged and informed, and so I don't really need a lot of rah-rah, sis, boom, bah stuff. So I don't go to a lot of that stuff. But every once in a while I do, and when I have an opportunity, I'll seize it. But again, I'm not somebody that lacks motivation for doing what I do or being engaged in what's going on, the national conversation or a statewide conversation or even a local conversation. So I'll be there in a couple of weeks next Wednesday. As a reminder, the Freedom Rally, we heard from our friends at Convention of States just the other day. And then on Monday, I just interviewed yesterday Mark Meckler, who started the Convention of States movement 9 years ago. Mark's going to be here next Wednesday for the Freedom Rally downtown Raleigh. Halifax Mall, that's that big grassy area behind the state legislature. So we're going to be gathering there. I'll be serving as the MC. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is going to be there. A lot of great speakers. Mark Meckler, who's fantastic. I interviewed him yesterday. He was awesome. I'm going to play part of that. That interview in its entirety, actually, I'll play on Monday. So that's going to be great, and that's all about trying to pressure. Unfortunately, we have to pressure our own government here in North Carolina in about 4 to 8 senators, really, particularly 3, but a few others that are kind of soft on it, and to show them that there's more and more people waking up. The Convention of States is a constitutional mechanism, and that got I didn't know this, but this is a constitutional story. Just a couple of days before they finalized the Constitutional Convention, they're like, hey, we have a problem. We messed up on something. The only way that you can amend this Constitution is going to be through Congress. What about the people? Because what if our Congress up in D.C. actually isn't representing the people well? Can we go around them? Checks and balances is the mentality you want to have there. And so they put into place the Convention of States, which would allow states, if you can get enough states, I think it's 34 states, to say, okay, we're going to have our own convention and have a conversation and propose some amendments. But then you have to go through the rigorous process of getting enough states' legislatures to agree to the amendment. So the concerns that would be out of control, going to destroy the U.S. Constitution, is a ridiculous assertion. And some people take that. And they're afraid, it would appear, I can't think of another decent reason, they're just afraid to empower us. And in the case of North Carolina, that would include Republicans. We don't have to go after Democrats. We don't have to pressure Democrats here in this state. Thank goodness. Praise the Lord on that. In the legislature, we actually have to pressure Republicans. And so that's the whole point of gathering next Wednesday. That's 11 a.m. downtown Raleigh. I'll talk about it again at the beginning of the week. 11 a.m. next Wednesday, which will be June 8th at Halifax Mall behind the legislature, Freedom Rally down there to try to assert our rights as individual citizens of the United States of America to come together, have a national conversation, to try to take some of the power away from our quote-unquote legislators up in D.C., to take some of their money away and to limit their time there. And that's the thing that a lot of Americans agree on those things, that we have major problems with Congress. But do you really expect Congress to clean itself up? They're not going to. So I'll talk about that again on Monday with Mark Meckler and that interview, and then the rally next Wednesday, June 8th, 11 a.m. downtown Raleigh. Convention of States, the website, you can go find out more information about that. I shared some links the other day, and I'll do that again. But you can just Google it yourself, Convention of States Action, and you'll find the information there. So we're going to be hearing from a dad who will use his first name, but we're not going to use his last name because for various reasons. But when you think of 4-H, the 4-H Club, what do you think of? You know, to me, that was always kind of, I always thought as basically a suburbanite that that was kind of a rural thing, 4-H Club. You know, maybe they deal with farming or something. I'm not really sure. But it seemed kind of, you know, Americana, American values, hard work. If you go to their website, 4-H.org, what is 4-H? 4-H is America's largest youth development organization, empowering nearly 6 million young people with the skills to lead for a lifetime. That sounds good. In 4-H, we believe in the power of young people. We see that every child has valuable strengths and real influence to improve the world around us. Okay. 4-H is delivered by Cooperative Extension, a community of more than 100 public universities, mark that, across the nation that provides experiences where young people learn by doing. For more than 100 years, 4-H has welcomed young people of all beliefs and backgrounds, giving kids a voice to express who they are and how they make their lives and communities better. So one of the things that the 4-H Club does, and then the state of North Carolina, they ally with North Carolina State University. So when you go look up 4-H in North Carolina, you're going to end up on a North Carolina State Extension website. And 4-H in North Carolina has a bunch of camps. They got a bunch of camps and centers. And so summertime, many of you probably have a son or a daughter that has gone or will be going. There's basically three areas or three zones in North Carolina for 4-H camps. And they're very popular. And so when you send your young son or daughter, particularly your daughter, off to a 4-H camp, and they're going to be in the girls' cabin, right? They're going to be sharing the bedroom, the bathroom, the showers with other girls, 8, 10 years of age. You know, most of them are pretty young, some teenagers as well. Generally, you wouldn't think you have anything to worry about, right? Generally. And this father, a concerned father, just was curious. And so he called the 4-H just to ask what the deal was with the cabins arrangements. And he finds out, and we're going to talk to him after the break, that they're actually allowing these young people to choose their cabins based on their, take a guess, gender identity. That's the 4-H Club here in North Carolina. And so you could have a 10-year-old daughter sharing a cabin, a bathroom, and showers with a confused 10-year-old boy. Do you have a problem with that? I certainly hope you do. We'll hear from the dad when we come back right after this.
Oh, angels sent from up above. You know you make my world light up.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Okay, parents and grandparents, if you've learned anything in the last few years, it's that you should be suspicious. You can no longer really at any level trust any organization implicitly when it comes to our children. What are they being taught? What are the rules? What's happening there? And if you're going to send your kids off to a summer camp, even if it's a what you would think traditionally is a trusted organization like the 4-H Club all over the country, they have 100 associations with public universities and they've been around for over 100 years. Then you would think this is just kind of good Americana, good experience out there in nature. Maybe you're going to send your son or daughter between the ages of 11 and 16 to the Fur, Fish, and Game Rendezvous Camp, which is at Camp Millstone, a 4-H camp in Ellerbe, North Carolina. I'm looking at the website. Looks like a beautiful place. What a great time. This reminds me of some of my days with Boy Scouts and Indian guides, stuff like that. Classes may include canoeing and riflery and archery, fishing, orienteering, much more. Campers will also participate in the North Carolina Hunter Safety Course. This sounds cool. So if you're going to send your 11 or 12-year-old daughter off to there, and you know, obviously, yes, you can assume they're going to stay in a cabin with a bunch of other girls of her age, and they're going to have some adults there, and things will be under control. You don't need to worry about it. But you don't live in that world anymore, okay? You just have to realize that you do not live in that world anymore. And so I had a friend text me this morning about another gentleman who was asking questions, and more of us need to be like that and be circumspect and to be, well, untrusting of these organizations, especially when our children are involved, whether you're talking about a church or a school or a youth organization, the YMCA, I don't care who it is, or the 4-H. Let's talk to Van, that concerned father. Van, thanks so much for calling in, man. How you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you taking the time.
You're very welcome. So let's back up a little bit and just kind of introduce everybody to what happened here. And how did you find out about what was going on at the 4-H camp?
So my daughter has been involved with 4-H at a level here in the local area, and a friend of ours had said, hey, you should look into 4-H camps. My daughter loves the outdoors, loves to fish, wants to get into hunting. We were recommended to take a look at this camp. I looked at it. She was very excited about it. We signed her up for it. I paid my deposit a couple of months ago. Roll forward, you know, yesterday, actually, I was going through my kind of summer checklist, just checking off to make sure that we've got everything we need for some of the camps that the kids are going to. And I called the camp and I said, hey, I haven't heard from you. How are we tracking? Everything's good. We'll be sending out emails coming up. And I said, so let me ask you a question. How do you assign building? And the lady on the phone, she said, well, we break them down by ages, you know, 10 to 14 or so. So kind of middle schoolers stay together. Girls are on one side of the camp. Boys are on the other. We have counselors that stay in the cabin, so everything is monitored. And I just kind of had an idea, and I'm like, you know, I hate to ask this question, but how do you identify who's a boy and who's a girl for the purpose of your camp?
Oh, man.
And the line went dead silent. And that's when I knew we had a problem. And I said, what are you going to tell me? And she said, we allow kids to select based on their gender identity. And I said, are you telling me that my preteen daughter could end up having a boy staying in her cabin? And she said, well, sir, we don't make that determination. We let the kids determine their gender. And that's how they. So I said, let me push this to the next conclusion then. How are you assigning your counselors? Mm-hmm. How do I know that one of your counselors as a 16 or 17 year old isn't going to be spending the night in my preteen daughter's cabin? And she said, well, sir, at this point, we have no counselors that we know of that identify. And I said, that's not what I asked you. If you do have one that identifies this way, as a parent, will I be notified? And again, dead silence. So I can't emphasize enough. Parents have to call and you have to ask pointy questions.
Yeah, and this person obviously, was this the Millstone 4-H camp office that you called, Van? Who are you calling?
I'm calling the Millstone 4-H office down in Ellerbe, North Carolina. You know, Sarah Moss is actually the administrative assistant there. She's a very nice lady. I feel for her. I think she is stuck in a bad situation and that she's answering the phone. And so I called back. I had to let my temper cool off a little bit. Let a couple hours go by, and I called him back. And I said, while I've got you on the phone, when was your intent to let the parents know that this is a camp policy? And she kind of hemmed and hawed, and she said, well, we're affiliated with NC State Outreach, so I think there's something on their website. I said, that's not what I'm asking you. As a parent, I went to your website. I've signed up. I've received your other emails. Nowhere in any of the emails that I've sent, that you have sent me, has this been addressed, that you were having gender fluid cabins.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I don't know that we're going to do that. And I told her, I said, I think you're setting yourself up for a lot of problems if you don't let parents know. Because as you alluded to in your intro, the average parent sending their kid to a fur, fish, and game camp doesn't assume that you have to worry about transgender fluidity at this age level.
Right. But unfortunately, that is becoming the norm because there is a political and worldview battle going on. That's just a reality, and nothing's going to remain untouched or unscathed by this. So 4-H, because they connect with, in this case, North Carolina State University. Now, I went to NC State University's website where they have their 4-H information. And when you get into, and I'm looking into the rules and the regulations about overnight camps and adults in rooms and children, it doesn't say, the word transgender doesn't show up anywhere. So the assumption here, especially given the days that we're in, is that, to your point, Van, they're not going to inform anybody. They don't want to tell anybody because they know the vast majority of Americans, even at this point, are going to have a problem with this. So you, unfortunately, I have to assume that they've made a decision to essentially hide the information as opposed to openly inform parents.
I absolutely could not agree with you more. At this point, the perception is that they are not going to address it until they're called on the carpet on it. Now, in her defense, when I asked the question directly, I got an answer. But had I not called, I would not know. And to that end, I got off the phone. I called a couple of other parents that I know. And I'm like, hey, do you know anything about this? Mm-hmm. And both were like, nope, not a clue. And I called another parent whose child is involved in YMCA camp. And again, we had to go digging, but we got in touch with a counselor who lets us know that the YMCA, now at their overnight camps, has the same policy.
Yeah.
And so I think at this point, you have to assume the worst until you get to them and ask the hard questions.
Which is exactly what Van and I are asking everybody across North Carolina to do. And if you're listening in South Carolina or Virginia, wherever you happen to be listening, if you have children or grandchildren going to a summer camp, I don't care what the organization is. Because most people, I think, like you, yourself, Van, and some of the people you talk to, oh, the YMCA, oh, 4-H, that'll be fine. No, it isn't. Because this agenda is permeating everything. And you have to look out for your children. And they're not going to tell you up front because they know people like Van and people like me are going to make a call, which is exactly what people need to do. Right, Van? They need to call.
Everybody, you've got to pick up your phone. You've got to call. And they've got to know that people are watching. And I think only by shining the light on this are we going to make it go away.
That's exactly
right.
Because
once the light hits it, it's going to fade quickly.
That's exactly right. Van, thanks so much, my friend. Keep in touch. We'll keep following this. We'll keep helping. We'll be right back.
There's a man going around taking names.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Just wanted to follow up. That was Van we were just talking to. A concerned father, his daughter, was planning to go to a 4-H camp this summer, Fur, Fish, and Game Rendezvous, the Millstone 4-H camp in Ellerbe, North Carolina, which looks perfectly fine when you go to their website. Just looks like a typical summer camp. You're going to be doing canoeing and riflery and archery and fishing and orienteering using compasses and maps. That's all great. But they're just checking up on things. And hey, by the way, because we live in 2022, friends, and if you're going to send your kids away somewhere, you have to find out what their deal is when it comes to gender assignments. If they're going to be staying overnight, or they're going to be in a situation where you'd be, as a parent, concerned about the mixing of boys and girls, those types of things should be front and center for you. Then you got to start asking this question about how do you determine who goes in what cabin? Because just to say the girls are in cabin B on this side of camp and the boys are in cabin A on this side of camp anymore is not enough. That's ignorant of the reality in which we live currently. You have to ask the question like Van, the father that just called in, asked. How do you determine who are girls and boys? Yes, it's ridiculous that we have to ask that question. It's totally ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's some other words I could use, but I'm not going to. Asinine. How about that? Can I say that? It's ridiculous. And so you have to ask, because that's when the lady goes, well, we leave that up to the kids to decide. Somebody else in the LGBTQ+++ movement recently, a teacher that was on Libs of TikTok, talking to their either kindergarten or first grade class, said, when you're born, the doctor looks at you and guesses your gender. That ain't a guess. Any girl, Audi boy, set in stone, that's the deal. Okay? For the overwhelming majority of people, for the overwhelming amount of recorded history, that's the deal. But not anymore. Now your doctor's guessing. So if you have a child going to a summer camp, in this case, particularly 4-H. So if you look up 4-H, they're associated with North Carolina State University here in North Carolina, and you go and you call them. Or if you signed up for a specific camp like Van did with his daughter, the Millstone 4-H camp. Okay, millstone4hcamp.com. That's their website. So if you or anybody you know or a grandson, granddaughter, whatever the case may be, I was planning to go to any 4-H camp. This is probably the deal at all of them. Okay, because this is a national organization. And all of a sudden, you've got a problem. And you need to be aware of it. And like Van discovered, they weren't going to tell anybody. That looks malicious. They're not going to tell anybody. Why? Because you're hiding it. Why would you hide it? Because the vast majority of people, including parents and a lot of the students that go to 4-H, would be uncomfortable with it. But you're beholden to your woke ideology, and so parents are a problem. Just like the Biden administration and the FBI. If you're a parent that's involved and engaged and informed and upset and you go to a school board meeting, you might as well be some kind of domestic terrorist because you're coming against the system. But that's what you have to do. You cannot trust any organization. Go look up the new SBC convention report on sexual abuse. Why? Because every single institution is made up of the same thing, human beings. And human beings are flawed. We don't do all bad stuff all the time, but we certainly all have a sin nature. And it can get worse and worse and worse and more depraved and take you into a reprobate mind, which is why they don't have a problem. There's a reprobate mind operating somewhere within 4-H that says we're going to take a 13-year-old boy who's confused and says he's a girl, and we're going to stick him in the cabin with a bunch of other 11 to 13-year-old girls to use the same bathroom, sleep right next to each other, use the same showers. And who cares what the girls say? And you're indulging a confused 14, 13-year-old boy, whatever the case may be. And you can virtue signal and pat yourself on the back because you're afraid to push back against the woke ideology that's out there. But the only way to put that down is to push back, to expose it, bring it out of the dark into the light like Van did. So if you have kids going to a 4-H club, specifically Millstone 4-H camp, call and talk to them yourself. Don't take my word for it. Don't take Van's word for it. But he talked to him and he found out. We're going to let the kid decide. So that could be a situation that your son or daughter faces, and you have a right to find out. Do you not? There's some people out there today would say, no, you don't have a right. You're part of the problem, you crazy parents. So whether it's 4-H, YMCA, whatever the camp is, you call and you ask about how cabins and people are split up based on gender. And unfortunately, you're probably going to be shocked. And then you have a decision to make. Are you going to still go? I am not saying, by the way, that every transgender person in America is a pedophile or a sexual predator, because they're not. But some could be, and some, do you think there's any untrustworthy 14 or 15-year-old boys out there that once they know the system, that they could actually think, I'll just claim to be a girl, and they'll stick me in the cabin? You don't think there's some really messed up 14 and 15-year-old boys out there that would do that? Of course they would. Wake up and smell the proverbial biblical coffee. It's human depravity. It's real. It's out there. Okay. Goodness gracious. Thank God for Van. Good job, Van. So 4-H camps, whatever camps you call. If you're Millstone 4-H camp, call them yourself. Millstone4HCamp.com. Okay. You do your research. You find out. Don't take my word for it. Don't take Van's word for it. But if you have kids or grandkids going to a summer camp, ask that question. Okay, there's a great article, thanks to my father-in-law, in Wall Street Journal. It came out last month, May 13th. I'm going to spend the rest of the show on this. How disagreement became disinformation, especially in light of COVID, but now with everything. Okay, this is an excellent article. I'm going to take my time going through it because I want to make a bunch of points for all of us, all of our edification and education to awaken us and equip us to understand what you're dealing with. Okay, this is excellent by Barton Swaim, Wall Street Journal, May 13th. The preoccupation with misinformation and disinformation on the part of America's enlightened influencers last month reached the level of comedy. He's talking about the Homeland Security thing. The Department of Homeland Security chose a partisan scold, Nina Jankowicz, to head its new Disinformation Governance Board. Remember that? Despite her history of promoting false stories and repudiating valid ones. The sort of scenario only a team of bumblers or a gifted satirist could produce. Less funny but similarly paradoxical was Barack Obama's April 21st address this year, lamenting online disinformation, in which he propounded at least one easily disprovable assertion. Tech companies, the former president said, quote, should be working with, not always contrary to, those groups that are trying to prevent voter suppression that specifically has targeted black and brown communities, unquote. There's no evidence, this writer says, of voter suppression in black and brown communities, and plenty of evidence of the contrary, inasmuch as black and Latino voter participation reached record levels in the 2020 election, which is true. One of the great ironies of American political life in the 2020s is that the people most exercised about the spread of false information are frequently peddlers of it. Their lack of self-understanding arises. Now, we're going to get into the weeds here, but this is really important. That's why I'm slow. Normally, I speak too fast, but I'm going to slow down. Their lack of self-understanding arises from the belief that the primary factor separating their side from the other side isn't ideology, principle, or moral vision, but information. You need to think in terms of COVID, okay? Masks and then, quote-unquote, vaccines. Raw data requiring no interpretation and no argument over its importance. It is a hopelessly simple-minded worldview. No one apprehends reality without the aid of interpretive lenses, and it's a dangerous one. The roots of this self-deceiving outlook are complicated but worth a brief look. Okay, so this is a worldview. Your worldview, your presuppositions about the nature of reality, right and wrong, who should be in charge, God, no God, ultimate moral rules, no moral rules. Is there ultimate truth? No truth. That's all worldview stuff, okay? The animating doctrine of the early 20th century progressivism with its faith in the perfectibility of man. Now think biblically here. You know that's not possible in this life, right? So use a biblical worldview here. Progressivism, with its faith in the perfectibility of man, held that social ills could be corrected by means of education. Now, let me hit the pause button there. If you study American history, political history, or just American history, in the early 20th century, the early 1900s, that's where you get Teddy Roosevelt and especially Woodrow Wilson, who were intense progressives. Intense. Okay? People do bad things in this view because they don't know any better. They harm themselves and others because they have bad information. That view is almost totally false, as a moment's reflection on the many monstrous acts perpetrated by highly educated and well-informed criminals and tyrants should indicate, right? So just because you're highly intelligent and well-informed and educated doesn't mean you're going to make good decisions. They can go off the rails, and they did. And they killed about over 100 million people in the 20th century alone. But it's an attractive doctrine for a certain kind of credentialed and self-assured rationalist. It places power, including the power to define what counts as good information, in the hands of people like himself. Okay, so this is what, think COVID, think Dr. Fauci, Pope Fauci, think Birx, think Big Pharma, think Moderna, think all these guys, okay? Because that's what's going on here. So we're going to continue to unpack this and this whole notion of disinformation and misinformation and what's going on. And that's why people are so excited about Elon Musk buying Twitter. This is really important. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today. Just another reminder and thank the Lord. Thank you, Father, for that. Father Van, who called in earlier, his daughter was going to the Millstone 4-H camp this summer and found out that there's putting kids in different cabins based on, well, you'd think the boys go over here and the girls go over there, but now anymore, you have to put that in air quotes. And so he called and they said, well, actually, the kids get assigned based on their gender identity. So you could have a 12-year-old boy who says that he's actually a girl, and they'll put the 12-year-old boy in the girl's cabin to use the girl's cabin, the girl's showers, and the girl's bathroom. See the problem? So if your kids are in 4-H camp or whatever camp they're going to this summer, or your grandchildren, grandparents, ask the question. You need to call these places and ask, just like Van called the Millstone 4-H camp, and talk to, and praise the Lord for the lady that he talked to there who answered him, gave him the true answer. He couldn't find it anywhere. They didn't email anybody and say, oh, by the way, this is the way we separate the quote unquote boys and girls in our cabins here at the overnight camp this summer. He had to ask, and much to her credit, she told him what she knew. And then you can act on it, right? And that's what, so if you're, whether it's 4-H or some other organization, make the call. But in this case, 4-H is on the hot seat because this is where it's happening. So if you're a part of that, if you know anybody that is, you do your own homework, you make the phone call, you ask the question, okay? Don't take my word for it or even Van's word for it. Be active. You cannot assume anything anymore. All right, back to this article, Wall Street Journal, May 13th. How disagreement became disinformation, right? We're big believers in disagreement. That's how this country started, disagreement. Disagreement and debate. That's what America's all about. You can even disagree and debate against your governing authority. You have that right. You can do that. You have a right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. You can take to the streets to a certain extent. You can push back. We can throw them out of office. Okay? But all of a sudden, you take a contrary position, COVID-19, masks, quote-unquote vaccines, Moderna, Pfizer, whatever. You go against Pope Fauci. You go against Dr. Birch. You go against, well, at Trump at the time, then Biden, any of these people, doctors, whole organizations, the school, Target, whatever. Oh, you're disinformation and misinformation. So this is pulling back the veneer on that and looking at the pathology behind it. Okay, it's an excellent article. There was also among a host, I'm back to the article, a host of intellectuals in the middle of the last century, because we started with the progressives, early 20th century, okay, who are thinking the answer, people can be perfected, we just need good education. Go back and look up the Frankfurt School, look up that mode of education, and this now it's, we're going to control the population via education, and education is what we tell them, right? But man is perfectible? Wrong. Ultimately glorified in Christ in heaven, but not on this earth. You have to assume a certain level of human depravity. There was also among a host of intellectuals, back to the article, in the middle of that last century, the expectation of a post-partisan future of technocratic centrism in which the large ideological questions are mostly settled. What is mainly needed from the political process, the thinking went, isn't visionary leadership, but skilled management. Arthur M. Schlesinger's The Vital Center, 1949, is an expression of that outlook, as are John Kenneth Galbraith's The Affluent Society in 1958 and Daniel Bell's The End of Ideology in 1960. Listen to this. These writers wanted the cool control of experts, not the messy brawling of democracy, which they felt lent itself to too easily to revolution. Right? That's why they treated us that would question masks, that would question shutdowns, lockdowns, what we did with our kids, the vaccines themselves, quote unquote vaccines. All because we're revolutionaries. We're dangerous. This is where this comes from. Quote, the tendency to convert concrete issues into ideological problems, to invest them with moral color and high emotional charge, Bell wrote, is to invite conflicts which can only damage a society. Shut up and do what the educated people tell you to do. Quote, unquote, follow the science, right? It goes on. The technocratic impulse is now an integral part of our politics. Those most given to it tend to view themselves not as adherents of any conception of political life, but simply as people who acknowledge the world as it is. They regard differing outlooks as deviations from reality that can only cause trouble for no good reason. They believe their critics, who look at the same facts but draw different conclusions, aren't simply mistaken, but irrational, corrupt, or both. COVID, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. You disagree with masking? No politician deployed the rhetoric or technocratic post-partisanship more openly than Mr. Obama in a 2007 speech to Google employees. He said that early in his campaign, quote, the American people at their core are a decent people, he allowed. Quote, there's a generosity of spirit there and there's common sense there. You could hear the butt coming, but he said, it's not tapped. He continued, mainly people, they're just misinformed. Or they're too busy, they're trying to get their kids to school, they're working, they just don't have enough information. Or they're not professionals at sorting out all the information that's out there. And so our political process gets skewed. But if the guys give them good information, their instincts are good and they will make good decisions. And the president, listen to this, has the bully pulpit to give them good information. Unquestionable source of truth there, huh, Mr. Obama? The self-regard implicit in that observation is astounding. More important is the naivete. The prevalence of bad information is nothing new. Lies, half-truths, wild exaggerations, and farcical inventions are part of democratic politics and always have been. That's why the answer to free speech, the dangerous speech, misinformed speech, is more speech, not less. You challenge. You have the debate. Mr. Obama's remarks reveal a failure to understand that large, complex arguments always involve assumptions and philosophical commitments, i.e. worldview, arising from background, experience, and personality. For him, talking about Obama, Politics is simple Manichaean struggle in which the righteous and well-intentioned use good data and the malign and ignorant use bad. They view themselves, like they often say on Vox, VOX.com, they view themselves not as proponents of a particular ideological conviction, but as disseminators of good data. Just follow the science. Right? So they claim their position is right and holy and just because they, quote unquote, followed the science, and you're a science denier. It was during the Obama years, not coincidentally, that fact-checking took firm hold on American journalism. This doesn't refer to the old-fashioned practice of scrubbing an article for errors before publication. Instead, media organizations issue fact checks of statements by public officials, candidates, and pundits. Websites such as Snopes.com, PolitiFact.com, FactCheck.org, and the Washington Post Pinocchio-issuing fact checker consider themselves America's arbiters of truth. Yeah, but is that what they are? They are not. But what looked like a renewed appreciation for factual accuracy quickly became, as this newspaper is talking about the Wall Street Journal, James Taranto points out relentlessly, an easy way to lend peremptory authority to badly argued opinion pieces and to undermine defensible arguments as false or mostly false or, quote unquote, lacking context. You ever seen that on your Facebook post? In many instances, these allegedly scrupulous fact checkers would count true statements false even as they conceded the statements were actually true. So here's an example. During the 2020 presidential debate, to take one memorable instance, Joe Biden claimed the Obama administration hadn't separated children from parents caught illegally crossing the border. CBS's fact-checking unit then published a piece claiming Mr. Biden's statement was true on the grounds that the Obama administration only separated migrant children from families under certain limited circumstances. See how they're playing around with the issue there? Golly, unbelievable. And that's why we get to this thing where they wanted to have just recently, and then it got shut down. Because, like with the 4-H thing and other summer camps, you have to get involved. You have to push back. You have to call things out. They actually started talking about a digital regulatory agency, right? And that's where you get Serena Jankowicz, who they were going to put in charge of basically the truth police, right? Skeptics mostly attribute this new support for censorship to bad faith. I prefer, the author of this article says, a more charitable explanation. The news censors sincerely mistake their own interpretations of the facts for the facts themselves. Their opinions, filtered unconsciously through biases and experiences, are, to them, simply information. Their views aren't views at all, but raw data. Competing interpretation of the facts can only be one thing, misinformation. Or if it's deliberate, disinformation. All right? Got it? It's exactly where we're at. So you get postmodernism, right? Which, of course, said there's no objectively knowable truth. Ha, ha, ha. But now today, he says, the college students have now retracted into a risibly facile non-philosophy in which there is no interpretation, only objective, quote unquote, facts. Oh, man. Such was the mental disposition of America's enlightened politicos and media sophisticates when the pandemic hit in early 2020. The challenge of public policy, as they saw it, was not to find practical, broadly acceptable solutions. The challenge, rather, was to find and implement the scientifically, quote unquote, correct solution, the one endorsed by, quote unquote, experts. Sound policy for them was a matter of gathering enough data and then following it. But of course, you can't follow data. Data just sits there and waits to be interpreted. The situation called, this is what they did, right? And this is what it called for. This is great by the author of this Wall Street Journal article. The situation called for the acknowledgement of risk. Imagine that. The weighing of costs against benefits, because we've train wrecked ourselves. The clear declaration of reasonable compromises between competing interests. What happened was an exercise in societal self-ruin. With the 2-year pandemic response now all but over, what stands out most is the absence of any acknowledgement of error on the part of anyone who advocated these disastrous policies. Exactly. So they think, they neglect the fact that their political worldview hacks and then take their position on the data and call that the facts themselves. So when you disagree with their position because they think their position is fact, then you're guilty of misinformation or disinformation. See the point there? And so you have to push back on that with the truth, unrelenting. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say,
Another program powered by the Truth Network.